Hello and welcome back. Today we're doing something a little bit different. We're going to transport ourselves right into the heart of a Sunday morning service.
It's February 8th, 2026, and we're sitting in the pews at New Life Benson.
And the message we're looking at comes from Brother Steve. The title is Christ and the Law.
You know, it's such a foundational message. And honestly, with the state of the world in 2026, with everything feeling a bit more chaotic, a bit darker, going back to the absolute bedrock of what we believe, it just feels necessary.
I completely agree. And before we even get to the sermon itself, you can just feel the atmosphere of this church. They're singing Goodness of God, and then they go old school with In the Garden.
Oh, he walks with me and he talks with me. That hymn never gets old.
It really doesn't. It just grounds you. And you have the announcements of Valentine's Barn Dance, a baby bottle drive for the pregnancy center. It just paints this picture of a community that's trying to hold on to life and joy.
But then the tone shifts. Brother Steve opens his Bible to Matthew chapter 5, verses 17 through 20, and he drops a heavy theological anchor.
Right into the words of Jesus. Think not that I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill.
And that's the whole sermon right there.
Okay, let's stop there for just a second, because that phrase, fulfill, not destroy, it's something most of us have heard 1,000 times. But if we're honest, it's also incredibly confusing because, you know, we aren't sacrificing goats. We're eating bacon.
Right.
Clearly, some parts of the law were stopped, right?
That is the classic tension. And that's exactly what this message sets out to resolve. Steve argues that if you view the law as just one giant block, you're going to get a messy theology.
So you have to break it down.
You have to slice it up. He says you have to understand that the law actually functions in three very distinct categories.
Three categories.
The judicial, the moral, and the ceremonial. And if you mix those up, you either end up trying to earn your salvation with rules that don't apply, or you slide into thinking grace means you can do whatever you want.
And neither of those is a good place to be. So let's go through them, because this framework is so helpful. He starts with the judicial law.
Right. The judicial law. Think of this as the civil constitution for the nation of Israel. These were the specific legal codes given to them to govern their society.
So this is where we get the rules that made Israel look, well, a little weird to their neighbor.
Precisely. And that was the point. It was designed to make them a peculiar people, to separate them. But here's the critical part. Steve says this specific aspect of the law has been set aside.
He used the term paused, I think.
Yes. And we need to be very careful here, because the reason it was paused is, well, it's heavy. It was set aside because Israel rejected their king.
When they rejected the Messiah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The kingdom governance was put on hold. But, and this is so important, Steve stops the sermon to make a very, very strong point about replacement theology.
I noticed that. He got very serious. He even mentioned losing a job opportunity because he refused to agree with the church that taught it.
It is clearly a hill he's willing to die on. For anyone listening who might not know, replacement theology is the idea that because Israel rejected Jesus, God is, you know, done with them permanently, that the church has completely replaced Israel.
And Steve says, absolutely not.
He says the church does not replace Israel. He uses this great phrase. He says the church enhances the kingdom we are grafted in. But God is not a contract breaker. He made promises to Abraham and David, and he intends to keep them.
So the judicial law is set aside because the nation it governs is, well, it's currently in a state of rejection.
Exactly. That contract is filed away. It's not shredded, but it's not active for us as the church.
Okay, that clears up a lot. But then we move to the second category, and this one feels a lot heavier, the moral law.
This is different. The judicial law was for a specific nation. The moral law is a reflection of God's eternal character.
The Ten Commandments.
The Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not steal. These aren't arbitrary rules. They are descriptions of who God is.
And since God doesn't change, these don't change.
Right. You don't get a pass on murder in the New Testament. But here's where fulfillment comes in. Brother Steve points out that Jesus fulfilled the moral law, not just by teaching it, but by living it.
He was the only one who ever did it perfectly.
A perfect score. And just think about the weight of that. It wasn't just that Jesus avoided sinning. It was that he was incapable of sinning because of who he was. He embodied the law. Steve said it was fulfilled by who he was.
That's a powerful way to put it.
Every other person in history has broken the moral law. Jesus is the only one to ever perfectly mirror the holiness of God.
So judicial law is set aside. Moral law is lived out by Christ. That brings us to the third bucket, and honestly, this is my favorite part of the whole message, the ceremonial law.
The visual gospel.
It really is. This is the sacrificial system, the tabernacle, the priesthood, all the blood of bulls and goats. And Steve says Jesus fulfilled this not by living, but by dying.
That distinction is vital. He lived to fulfill the righteousness of the moral law. He died to pay the penalty demanded by the ceremonial law. And the imagery here, it gives you chills. He talks about the veil in the temple.
The massive curtain separating the Holy of Holies.
A curtain that basically screamed, keep out. It was a barrier between sinful man and a holy God. And the moment Jesus breathed his last on that cross, that veil ripped.
And not from the bottom up.
Not from the bottom up like a man tore it. From the top down.
God tore it.
It was the divine signal that the entire Levitical system, the priests, the altars, all of it, was over. Finished. The shadow was gone because the reality had arrived.
I really want to dig into that shadow versus reality idea because he spent a good bit of time on it. He compared Aaron, the first high priest, with Jesus.
And it is not a fair fight. It's a study in contrast. Think about Aaron. He had to enter an earthly tabernacle, a tent made by human hands.
Jesus entered the real one in heaven.
Right. Aaron had to offer sacrifices every single year because the blood of animals can't actually wash away sin. It just covers it. It's like painting over rust.
And Jesus.
One sacrifice for all time. He dealt with the rust itself. And then there's the priest himself. Aaron had to offer a sacrifice for his own sins first. He was flawed.
And mortal. They kept dying.
Which is a big problem for a priesthood. You get a good one, he dies. You hope the next one is decent. But Jesus is the high priest who lives forever. He's unchangeable, infallible. Why would anyone want to go back to the shadow?
He also walked through the tabernacle furniture. I love this kind of typology. It turns the Old Testament from a boring blueprint into a treasure map.
It's remarkably consistent. You walk in, you see the door. Jesus said, I am the door.
The brazen altar where the sacrifice died.
That's the cross. You see the laver, the basin of water. That's Jesus washing us.
The golden lampstand.
I am the light of the world, the bread. I am the bread of life. Even the veil itself represented his body, which was torn for us. The ceremonial law wasn't destroyed. It reached its destination.
That is a great way to put it. So judicial law paused, moral law kept. Ceremonial law completed. It's a brilliant theological history lesson. But then he pivots.
And this is where the rubber meets the road. Because if we just stop at the history, we miss the whole point. We could just sit back and say, wow, Jesus did it all, and then go back to living our lives the exact same way.
Steve calls this the amazing part of the sermon. He takes us to Romans chapter 8, verse 4.
This is the application. The verse says that the righteous requirement of the law might be fulfilled in us who do not walk according to the flesh, but according to the Spirit.
Fulfilled in us. I mean, that is a staggering statement.
It changes everything. It means the law isn't an external checklist on your wall that you fail to keep every day. It becomes an internal engine because Christ is in you. The righteousness of the law, that moral law, it actually starts to flow out of you.
So we don't keep the law to get saved. We keep the law because we are saved.
And the lawgiver lives inside us. It's not about gritting your teeth and trying harder. It's about abiding.
Yeah.
It's a natural byproduct of connection with God.
But, and there had to be a but. Steve didn't sound like he was seeing a lot of this happening. He actually sounded pretty heartbroken about the state of the church in 2026.
He used a phrase that just hit me right in the chest. He said, Christians get saved and go to sleep.
Yeah, that hurts.
It's a haunting image. You cross the starting line, and instead of running the race, you just lie down on the track and take a nap. He looks at this dark world, and he sees a church that's largely stagnant.
And he brought up that statistic. I found it hard to believe. Over 80% of seminary graduates will not be preaching after 10 years.
80. That is just a catastrophic loss of leadership.
And he said the cause is disillusionment. This is where the message got really challenging. He told that story about the preacher boys from Clovis back in the 90s.
You had these young men, many from the military, disciplined, intense, on fire for God. They go into the ministry full of zeal, but then they get into the church. And what do they find?
A social club.
They find a group of people who are asleep. Apathy. People more concerned with the color of the carpet than the state of their souls. And these young preacher boys couldn't handle it. The fire inside them just got extinguished by the ice they found in the pews. So they quit.
That's such a heavy indictment on us. It forces you to ask, am I the reason my pastor is discouraged? Is my lack of passion pouring water on his fire?
It's a terrifying thought. Steve asked a very direct question. What have you done for Jesus today? Not what did you think about, not what did you post. What did you do?
That brings it all back to the context of 2026. This dark world he keeps mentioning. You can't navigate darkness if you're sleepwalking.
You really can't. And this connects back to his emphasis on sanctification. He knows that holiness is the only safety mechanism we have. The more holy you become, step by step, the more you see God's purity and the more you realize how much you need him. It's a cycle that keeps you awake.
If you stop pursuing it, you fall asleep.
And in this climate, falling asleep is dangerous.
It reminds me of what we discussed at the beginning, the judicial law making Israel peculiar.
That's the thought I've been sitting with. We agree that the judicial law is gone. We don't have those external markers of weirdness anymore.
So how are we supposed to stand out?
That's the question, isn't it? If the moral law is written on our hearts, and if the Spirit of the living God is inside of us, shouldn't we still look peculiar?
We should. We absolutely should.
If we look exactly like the dark world around us, our entertainment, our spending, our apathy, are we really fulfilling the law? Or are we just mimicking the culture?
That completely reframes what fulfillment looks like. Maybe the greatest fulfillment of the law in 2026 is daring to be strange again, daring to be distinct. Not because of a rule book, but because the Holy Spirit simply cannot look like the world.
And that takes courage. It takes courage to be awake when everyone else is sleeping.
The veil is torn. The access is open. The question Brother Steve leaves us with is, really, are we going to walk through that open door and live? Or are we going to stay in the lobby and take a nap?
I know my answer needs to be, we need to wake up.
We certainly do. Thank you for joining us on this look into New Life Benson and this incredible message.
Indeed. Stay awake out there.
We'll see you next time.